I wasn't always planted here, and I wasn't always a tree. It's hard for a girl when she's 13, standing in her bedroom getting ready for school, and suddenly she's a sapling. They warn you that your body will be changing, but no one talks about suddenly having roots forced their way down through the floorboards and branches brushing the ceiling. Thank heavens my room was on the ground floor. I had no idea what was happening, but I didn't feel alarmed at all. It's a most delicious sensation when one turns into a tree. Part of it is the feeling of a really good stretch, when you can feel every muscle doing exactly what it is supposed to do. But part of it is the way that the world seems to change around you, as your eyes disappear and your skin becomes bark and the world becomes vivid in an entirely different way. When you're a tree, light feels like sugar tastes, except it's all throughout you. The air that touches you is a thousand caresses through your hair and across your skin. The water and soil that your roots touch are rich with a thousand flavors that you can feel are making you stronger. It took me a while to realize what had happened, partially because I was distracted by how wonderful the world had suddenly become, and partially because I didn't have eyes to see myself in the mirror. My new senses and my new way of thinking helped me come to the inevitable conclusion. But I wasn't afraid. Trees don't get afraid. It's one of the great things about being a tree. Trees can't hear exactly, but I felt my mother's gasp when she walked into my room. She had come to chide me for taking too long to get ready for the day, and instead she discovered her daughter missing and a strange-looking tree planted in the carpet. I don't care if you're a person or a tree. When your mother makes that sort of sound and then shouts your name, you turn to face her. And that's when I turned back into a person. I give my parents full credit. They were very reasonable and very sensible about the whole thing. They didn't waste time trying to deny it, and they didn't take it into their heads to accuse me of witchcraft or anything like that. Instead, my father, who was a stolid, plodding sort of businessman, decided to approach the problem as he approached everything. He called in the experts and he did his research. Of course, they couldn't actually tell people that I had turned into a tree or that I was doing it on a regular basis. It's like riding a bicycle. Once you've done it once, you know how to do it again. And it was too pleasant not to do again. Doctors examined me and pronounced me fit, almost as fit as it was possible to be. There was no sign of anything unusual or upsetting. The tree doctors were called and pronounced tree me to be in excellent condition. Then we consulted the academics. It turns out there is a whole mythology around women and trees. The classic one is the nymph, or the dryad, from Greek legends. But my parents decided I wasn't one of those, partially because we didn't have any Greek ancestry at all. Which seems like a rather silly point to focus on, but my parents were very proud of being Scottish, and partially because nymphs and dryads lived in trees. They were very close to their trees. If you cut down a dryad's tree, she died, but they didn't become trees, so far as we could tell. Even stranger was the kind of tree that I became. Dryads are supposed to be linked to oaks. Dries signifies oak in Greek, but I definitely didn't become an oak tree. A botanist came in and examined tree me, rooted in the back garden. He was surprised to tell my parents that they had a Sequoia dendron giganteum, also known as the giant redwood. We grow to be the most massive trees in the world, which is why one of our other official names is simply Big Tree. We can grow to be almost 95 meters tall, although at the time I was nowhere near that tall. Giant redwoods occur naturally only on the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada mountains of California. This was even more confusing since none of our family had ever been to America. My parents were almost as disappointed that I wasn't at least turning into a good Scottish or Australian tree as they were that I was turning into a tree at all. Still, it could be worse, my mother remarked. There are any number of things that she could have turned into that would have been far less acceptable. Like, I don't know, some sort of lizard? Or an actress, remarked my father, or a novelist. Faced with the undeniability of their tree daughter, my parents were very firm. Nymphs and dryads might spend their time sleeping in grottos or dancing in ponds to charm shepherds, my father said, but no daughter of mine is going to waste her time doing such frivolous things. It was agreed I could be a tree in the evenings or at times when no one was visiting, but I still needed to finish my schooling and be a productive young lady and a credit to the family name. The fact that I was such an odd tree for an Australian backyard meant that I had to be extra careful. It was 3 years before I learned that I was not the only tree girl. As I grew as a girl, I grew as a tree. I've never understood the relationship of time between human me and tree me. All I can tell you is that by the time I reached 16, I stood almost as tall a tree as I do now. Obviously, I was too big for my parents' back garden, even at night, so I got in the habit of going to the Royal Botanic Gardens, Victoria, which was quite close to our home, and being a tree there. My father would drop me off at dusk, and I would go into the conifer plantation, where I could blend in. Early in the morning, he would take me home, and I'd get ready for school. Trees drink in the sunlight, but it's also lovely to be a tree at night. You taste in the moonlight and the starlight, which feel different, more subtle, but just as delicious. And you're aware of the stars wheeling overhead, drawing massive circles in the sky. You can feel the earth turning beneath you. The world is more magical when you're a tree. One morning, I became a girl extra early. Father wasn't due to pick me up for at least an hour, so I amused myself by walking around the deserted gardens. I was strolling on the edge of a lawn when I saw a gorgeous tree suddenly turn into an equally gorgeous girl, perhaps 2 years older than me. I was so utterly astounded that I didn't gasp. I screamed in excitement. She, of course, jumped and then took off running. I don't know what she thought, but I was so afraid of losing her that I called after her. Wait, stop, I'm a tree too. If I had been a man or even a boy, she might have kept on running, but my voice and those words were enough to get her to stop and look back at me suspiciously. Prove it, she called. So I did. The look on her face was wonderful. Now you, I said, once I had a mouth again. It was the first time I'd ever seen what it looks like when someone turns into a tree. Their skin and face fade, drawn back away from the world, while the intricate mottling of the bark comes in, like a pencil sketch taking shape. Before you realize it, there's a tree before you, and you're watching it grow afresh from a sapling to whatever age it is. You see leaves budding, branches spreading out. It's like years pass in moments. Her name was Cynthia, and she was an elm. Her family was rich, and they did not know about her hobby of becoming a tree. Her brothers and sisters didn't become trees. No one knew anything about it. It was a magic just inside her, and inside me. And so we became the best of friends. Every night, she would leave the flat her parents had bought her, and meet me at the Botanic Gardens. We would talk as people, and then we would talk as trees. Planted near each other, our roots would touch, and we would share ideas through our connection. There were some marvellous arguments that we conducted through pheromones and the rustling of our leaves. She was clever. People think of trees as slow, but trees think fast. They don't think like humans, not in words, but if you need to ponder a big impossible idea, I recommend you spend some time as a tree. It was Cynthia who discovered that our time as trees changed us as people. We didn't have to eat or drink. We could just live off the light we gathered as trees. And we were stronger, so that at 17 I could lift more than the strongest man on record. I know, I looked it up. By the time I finished school, my parents were very pleased that I'd become friends with such a nice girl from such a good family. I was invited to parties with the best of Melbourne society. There were dances and dinners, and we went to the openings of galleries and plays. I was having a wonderful time, but Cynthia wasn't satisfied. "People are ridiculous," she said one night at the gardens. "We hadn't changed. We were just sitting under the stars." "Absolutely," I agreed absently. I was thinking about a boy I rather liked, who hadn't had the good sense to ask me out. "They just spread out and cover everything. They don't put anything back into the land. What have they done that's worthwhile?" "Oh, I don't know. I rather like this garden," I said. "If not for people, this whole land would be a garden. I'm sick of this city. Shall we go on a trip?" I was surprised. How could one be sick of the city, with all its excitements? But Cynthia had always had as much of the excitements as she could want. "You and I can take my car, and we'll go out into the countryside for a couple of weeks." "That sounds marvellous," I replied. I had a moment's thought for the boy I rather liked, but there was the prospect of being a tree in new soil with new horizons. My parents gave their permission, a little hesitant at first, but they were still dazzled by Cynthia's family and their connections. A couple of days later, we were heading out of Melbourne in Cynthia's car. Arrangements had been made, of course, an itinerary laid out with stops in inns and hotels and with friends of both families. My parents would not have me go gallivanting off into the hinterlands without a firm schedule. But still, we were able to explore. The stars were 1,000 times brighter away from the city. The soil was different to the touch. And, out in the world, away from everyone, we could stop in the car in the empty middle of nowhere. For the first time in years, I could put my feet on the ground, throw my arms back, and feel myself growing and glowing in the bright light of the sun, with no strangers around to take fright. We had adventures. We got lost on unpaved roads. A tire went flat, and I discovered I was now strong enough to lift the back of the car myself, with one hand, while Cynthia changed the wheel. "The more time we spend as trees," Cynthia remarked, "the stronger we become. Have you noticed?" I hadn't. "I did a test," she continued. "I saw how much I could lift, and then I spent a weekend as the elm. Afterwards, I could lift even more." She smiled faintly. "I wonder what the limit would be, if there is a limit. Who knows what we could become?" And then one day, we returned after a picnic in the bush to find a man by the car. He was dressed rough, with weathered skin and a swag on his back. He was big, and suddenly I didn't feel safe. "Please step away from my car," said Cynthia. She said it in a level voice, not a trace of fear. "Easy," he said, and started coming towards us. "And please don't come over here," she said. "You only get one ask," he said. He kept walking towards us and licked his lips. As he came closer, I shrank away. But Cynthia stood still, even when he put his hand on her wrist. And then, with an easy flick of her arm, she broke his leg. I don't know which turned my stomach more, the sound of his bones snapping or the outraged screams that came a second later. "You see," she said, turning to me, "this man is a weed. He is a predator in the garden, come to take whatever he wants. People, cars, trees. Do you see his axe?" She was completely calm, undisturbed by the screaming man at her feet. "He's the worst of the worst, but the more people there are, the more like him there will be. This is why you and I will need to be the gardeners. We have to limit the number of people." "What, here?" I asked, bewildered. We were miles from anywhere. "Everywhere. You and I are the crossover between nature and people. We can become strong enough to prune where it's necessary." She looked down at the man and clenched her fist. "Cynthia, no, you mustn't." I rushed forward to stop her, and she caught me. We both changed. We pushed against each other, our roots wrestling and twisting, trying to push each other out of the soil. Our branches caught and pulled, locking us together. I don't know what would happen if we were uprooted, but I was determined. I could feel her thoughts of resolution and betrayal, or were they mine? And then she was changing back, and I followed. I opened my eyes, human again, but she was already there, and she shoved me back. Then, with her eyes fixed on me, she placed her foot on the man's chest and changed. He didn't have time to scream before she was the elm, growing into him. I saw his eyes grow wide, and then the roots flowed over him. Then there was only the tall, beautiful tree covering him completely, planted as firmly as if it had been there forever. I scuttled back out of her shade like it was poison. I waited for her to change back, but there was just the tree, drinking in the sunshine. For the whole day, I sat in that valley and watched the elm stand proudly, and when dusk came, she was stepping forward. Behind her, there weren't even bones, as if she had consumed even the memory of him. We drove home. We didn't speak again for the rest of the journey. All the time, I remembered what Cynthia said, and I saw the thought she had shared when we fought. She would not stop. She would gain all the strength she could, and then she would start pruning humanity. After a week, her parents contacted me. They told me that she had disappeared, and did I have any idea where she might have gone? I went to her flat and found nothing new or strange, except a brochure for the Pilot Hill Arboretum. I knew immediately what her plan was. So I came here, and here she was, planted firmly, growing stronger every day, undisturbed, until she would be strong enough that nothing could stop her. Nothing except me. So we're both here. I can afford to wait her out. An elm tree can live for several hundred years, but a giant redwood can live for thousands. One day, she'll change back, and I can't imagine what kind of powers she'll have then. Luckily, she can't imagine what I'm growing into. It'll be a pretty good fight, I think. Look around you. You're looking at a place that will be the battleground of titans. And in the meantime, our roots are spread out beneath us, and it takes all my strength not to reach out and for us to share our thoughts. I miss the memory of my friend, but not what she is now. Every once in a while, I catch a thought of hers on the air, a scent of resolve and hatred. She hasn't changed her mind. If anything, she's grown more determined in what she will do, what she'll do to you. But I'll stop her. Now, just remember, it's my fight. Don't take it into your head to stroll on down and carve your name in her bark or do anything to hurt her. When the time comes, it'll be me versus her, and it will be all the sweeter for knowing that I'll be taking her on at her very best. That said, do feel free to go over and spit on her. She's the elm. In the meantime, I'm going to drink in the water, breathe in the air, soak in the light, and enjoy the view. I recommend it.